Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, and welcome to Secrets to Creating Wealth, Module 5. I want you to start incorporating the law of attraction into your life. Now, interestingly enough, you're already doing that. It's not something that you have to actually start. But what you do have to start is incorporating it in the right way. The law of attraction states that whatever you focus on, you're going to get. If you focus on it being a great day, it's going to be a great day. If you focus on it being a terrible day, it's going to be a terrible day. Why is that? Well, on a psychological level, you just set yourself up for success or failure based on the way you think. On a metaphysical level, you tell the universe what you want, and the universe gives you what you want. And it happens on a day-to-day basis, but it also happens on a longer-term basis. Let's say, for example, that you focus on being extremely wealthy, whatever that means for you. You pick a number and you focus on it. Or you have limitless wealth in mind and you focus on that. Well, it doesn't mean that you're going to have that day. What it does mean is that you're going to put out into the universe those vibrations that are going to bring you back what you want. And on a practical level, you're going to start taking advantage of opportunities that are going to bring that to you because you're focused on it. Your subconscious mind starts to look for opportunities in your life. So you've got it happening on a number of levels, this thing we call the law of attraction, both at a psychological level and at a metaphysical level, always in action, always giving you what you focus on. So let's start using it to get what you want. How about getting focused on bringing positive things into your life? In this case, bringing wealth into your life. That's what this program is about. That's what these recordings are about, bringing wealth into your life. Now, I mentioned that Frank Mangano and I wrote a book called You Can Attract It. Again, I'm not plugging the book, but I do want to mention some concepts from the book that are going to help you. And these are free of charge. I'm going to give them to you right now. You don't need to buy the book to get this information. I'm going to give it to you right now. Step one, you've got to change your negative beliefs about money and wealth in general into positive beliefs. Change your negative beliefs into positive beliefs. Now, does that happen by magic? Does that happen just by you thinking, okay, I'm going to change my beliefs? No. It happens by you realizing, first of all, what those beliefs are. What do you believe about money? What are your negative limiting beliefs about money? What have you been believing that's neither true nor false, but you made it true in your life? So I want you, a little later on today, after you're done listening to this recording, to sit down with a pen and paper and write them down. What are your negative beliefs in one column on the left, and on the right column, how are you going to change them? What are you going to change them into? For example, maybe your parents said that money doesn't grow on trees. You've got to struggle a long time before you have any money. Who knows? These things become part of your beliefs and ultimately become part of your limiting beliefs because you accept them to be true. You buy into the hypnosis of limiting beliefs. They're neither true nor false. You create your own reality. You've got to accept responsibility, as we already talked about. We meaning you and I. But you've got to accept this as something that is in your head that you have made into reality. So in the left column, put your limiting beliefs. In the right column, put what you're going to change them to. Another classic example would be rich people are evil. Or maybe you don't say it quite that harshly, but rich people are bad or rich people are mean. Perhaps you have some choice words about rich people. Well, how are you going to become one of them if being one of them means all of those negative things? How are you going to become wealthy if being wealthy means that you hurt people or that you cheat people or that you're an evil person? How are you going to become an evil person? It doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that? You've got to change your associations. You've got to realize that, sure, some people who are wealthy are not the best people on the planet to associate with. I think everyone's equal, actually, but some people are less pleasant than other people. Sure, that happens. But it also happens with people who aren't wealthy. Some homeless people are unpleasant. If I were homeless, I'd probably be unpleasant too, to some degree. But my point is that this idea that the more money you have, the more evil or mean or corrupt you become is something you've got to let go of, if that's one of your limiting beliefs. So, perhaps that's what you have in column one. And be really honest. If you have some choice words to say about rich people, go ahead and put them down. Go ahead and spell them out. You're the only one who's going to see this unless you share it with someone else, but put them in that column. And by the way, it's very helpful to write things out. I know you can type things on a computer, but it's so much more helpful if you take a piece of paper and a pen or pencil and just write them out. Why? Because your subconscious mind has to go through a lot more processing when you write something down, as opposed to when you type it out. You have to form each letter. You have to press against the paper. And this is very important psychologically, especially when you get to the right-hand column, when you're changing those beliefs. You feel it more. It becomes more real for you. It's not just some exercise where you're typing on some keys. It becomes more of a physical activity that you internalize. So whenever possible, write things out if you want them to really mean something to you. Sort of like getting an email as opposed to, it's sort of like getting an email birthday card as opposed to a birthday card that somebody wrote up by hand. Or an email invitation as opposed to an actual physical invitation that shows up in a nice envelope with nice calligraphy and so forth. It's not just the fact that it takes more time to do it. It's the fact that it takes more processing when the person receives it. They have to open an envelope. They have to take it out. They have to hold it. After they read it, it doesn't just disappear. They don't just press a button and make it go away. They can throw it away if they want, but it still exists in their home or office or wherever they are, and they'll probably see it again. Even if it's in the trash can, they'll probably see it again or at least think about it being there. It's not just something that they can get rid of with the click of a button. So whenever possible, and it's almost always possible, write something out, especially an exercise like this. Write something out. Make it something physical that's actually in existence in your world in front of you. So left column, negative beliefs, right column, new beliefs. So for example, rich people are blank. Maybe you have a choice word that you put in there. Rich people are blank, some negative derogatory word. In the right-hand column, you start to put a little bit more thought into that, and you realize that, well, you know, people in all walks of life can be that word. It's not limited to rich people. Money doesn't necessarily cause that to happen. People either are that word or they're not. It may make it easier for them to be that word on a bigger scale, but it doesn't really cause them to be that word. And you start to wonder, how am I going to write that in the right-hand column? I realize that, yes, it makes sense, yes, but how am I going to write that? How about rich people are people? They're people, just like any other people. They have a value of one. Everyone has a value of one. That's the way I look at the world. Everyone has a value of one, whether they're homeless or the most wealthy person in the world, whether they've accomplished nothing or everything, doesn't matter. They have a value of one. That's a person you're talking about. When it gets right down to it, when you take away everything else, take away everything that people know about them and how cool they are and what they have, strip them down to just their bare essence, they have a value of one. Put them next to another person who's stripped down also, they have a value of one. Everyone has a value of one. So, for example, your left-hand column may say rich people are blank, some choice derogatory word, and in the right-hand column you can say rich people are people. Neither good nor bad, they're just people. They come in all shapes and sizes, all levels of pleasant to be around and not pleasant to be around. They run the spectrum just like anyone else does in any other walk of life, in any other level, if you will. Putting people in levels is not really something I prefer to do, but when we're talking about creating wealth, there are levels of wealth. So it's helpful to look at that. What level are they at compared to you, wealth-wise? So people at all levels can be that word. Rich people are just people. So step one is changing your negative beliefs into positive beliefs, and you understand how to do that with your lists. Step two is not going to require that list anymore. That list is just to get it all out on paper so you can see it and you can start to form new beliefs. Step two is know what you do not want. What do you not want? What are you fed up with? That's a very individual thing. For me, I don't want to go to a job where I have to wear a suit and tie. I don't want that. That doesn't make any sense to me. And my friends who are in business don't want that either. None of them wear suits and ties. And some of them run very large businesses that span many countries, and they don't wear a suit and tie because they don't want that either. Other of my friends are in business, and they do want to wear a suit and tie. So it doesn't matter. It's an individual choice. It comes down to, what do you not want? That's what we're talking about in step two. What do you not want? Maybe you don't want to work in an office. Maybe you don't want to live in a certain place. What do you not want? That's an important step that many people overlook. So write that down in a list on paper. What do you not want? You can do that right now if you want. You can pause this and do that right now if you want. What do you not want? That's important. Pause this and take more time if you need it. But step three is know what you do want. So I want you to write a list of what you do want. Now that you know what you don't want, you know that none of those things are going to be on your list. Those things are unacceptable. What do you want? Maybe you do want to wear a suit and tie. Maybe for you that makes you feel good about yourself, makes you feel professional. Or if you're a lady, maybe you want to wear a dress to work every day. Maybe you want to have to wear a dress to work every day. Maybe you want everyone to be required to wear formal clothing every day. Maybe you like that because it makes you feel more professional, makes you feel good about yourself, makes you feel that you're surrounded by professionals. Some people want that. So what do you want? Maybe you do want to live in a certain place. Maybe you do want set hours to work because, after all, that can help you get control of your environment. When you have set hours to work, you know that before this I don't work, after this I don't work, during this time I do work. Time for work, time for play, it helps organize everything. So maybe you do want that. Maybe that adds structure to your life. That can be very powerful. So write down what you do want and let go of judging it. Perhaps you want something that you think if somebody saw it, they would think, oh, that's silly. Like the suit and tie thing, for example. Maybe you think that if you wanted that, it would look silly to someone else. But it's not silly. Nothing is silly. So let go of judgment and just write what you want. Pause this recording if you need to. Take as long as you need to do it. Because the next thing we're going to move into is asking for it. So you know what you don't want. We're not concerned with that right now. What we are concerned with is step three, that piece of paper, what you do want. I want you to ask for it. I want you to pause this recording and just ask for it. Who are you asking? Well, if you're religious, you can do it in a religious way. If you're not, then you can just ask the universe. And more specifically, you can ask yourself, ask for it. Ask for what you want. Ask for everything you want. What's the harm in asking? I did an experiment one time, and I was with my friends in Los Angeles, and we were outside the Pantages Theater, which is a theater on Hollywood Boulevard, where they were showing The Lion King over and over. For years, they're showing The Lion King play. And we're outside of that, outside of the Pantages. And we noticed that there are a lot of panhandlers, as I call them, people asking for money. And one thing that I started noticing is that people were asking for small amounts of money. People were asking for 50 cents or sometimes strange amounts of money, like 35 cents, for example. Do you have 35 cents? And my thinking was that they were asking for increments of money that they thought would be odd increments of money that people would say, well, 35 cents? No, but let me see if I can't make 35 cents. Here's two quarters. Go ahead and take 50 cents. I guess that was their thinking. Somehow that made sense to them, and they thought it would generate positive results. So I said to my friends, having a degree in psychology, I said, let's do an experiment. I'm going to pose as a panhandler. I say panhandler because they could be homeless, they could be otherwise. I've heard some stories that people drive a Jaguar and park it around the corner and then ask for money. So you never know what walk of life they're actually from. So I just say panhandler so that I don't categorize them as homeless or not. And so we did an experiment. I said, for 10 minutes, I'm going to pose as one of those people and I'm going to ask people for money. But I'm not going to ask for 50 cents or 35 cents. I'm going to ask for $10. After all, it's the Pantages Theater. People are coming out of the theater. They've just paid a lot of money for a ticket. They have money. It doesn't make any sense to ask for a small amount. I'm going to ask for a higher amount. So we set up a psychological experiment. We did this within 5 minutes. Set up the whole experiment. My friends were on board with it. It seemed exciting to them. So I posed as the panhandler. And I went away from my friends. They were observing. And for 10 minutes, I asked everyone I met for $10. No one gave me $10. But many people gave me more than 50 cents or 35 cents. In 10 minutes, I made $60 there. I didn't continue on, but I made $60 in 10 minutes. How much was I going to make an hour if I continued on? $360. How much would I have made in 8 hours if that had continued, if I had the steady flow of people that were required to keep up this high level of income? Over 8 hours, I would have made whatever 360 times 8 is. What would I have made in a week? What would I have made in a month? What would I have made in a year? A lot of money. I would have made more than most attorneys if I had access to a continuous flow of people that I needed access to in order to generate that. What did I take away from that experiment that I can teach you? That you need to ask for it. The panhandlers asking for more money. Why weren't they asking for $10? Why were they asking for 35 cents or sometimes 15 cents? Because they thought that if they asked for more, they wouldn't get it. They would get shot down. They thought that if they asked for more than 50 cents or more than a dollar, that it would seem excessive, and the person would just laugh and not give them anything. That's my theory. Well, think about that as it relates to your life. Think about my experiment, and think about how that relates. Think about my experiment. And by the way, I gave that money to a panhandler. Right after that, I gave the $60 away. I don't know what they spent it on, but I gave it to them. And by the way, I don't say the word panhandler in a negative way. I'm just using that word to identify the people to the best of my abilities that you'll understand who I'm talking about. I in no way even look at people who ask for money as negative people or as unworthy or anything like that. But what did I learn from that that I can share with you? I learned that you have to let go of your limiting beliefs. I had a theory that these people who were panhandling had limiting beliefs, and those limiting beliefs were limiting their income, causing them to have to panhandle all day to make what I made in 10 minutes. Why? Because I asked for it. Could they have done the same thing? Yes. Why are some people wealthy and some people aren't wealthy? Why is that? I want to submit to you the very simple theory that they ask for it, that they ask for what they want. Why do I charge $25,000 for a hypnosis session? Because I have let go of my limiting beliefs. I ask for it. So I want to encourage you to start asking for it. Start asking for what you are worth. Does asking for $10 from everyone you meet mean that you're going to get $10 from everyone you meet? Of course not. I didn't get $10 from anyone. But overall, I made more money than the panhandlers. How do I know that? Because I observed them. I knew what they were making. Over the course of 10 minutes, they would make approximately $2 during a good 10-minute period. That's when they were really doing well. A lot of people would just ignore them and not give them anything. My request of those people, and essentially my request of the universe, was higher than that. I had higher expectations. What did that cause them to do? The people who heard that thought, this person values himself. Some of them thought it was ridiculous. Some people laughed, yes. But overall, the results were far better than the results being obtained by the average panhandler because I asked the people for it. And more importantly, I asked the universe for it. I put it out there that I'm worth more than that, that I want more than that. It got them thinking bigger. Just like my friends who encouraged me to walk through the caves or to ride my bike further or to work for 2 years on a book that I thought would take 5 minutes. When you push yourself to thinking bigger, you push other people to thinking bigger. It causes a reaction, a positive reaction. So whatever it is you want, I want to encourage you to ask for it. Step five is allow it into your life. Allow it into your life. What if I asked for $10 and somebody handed me a five and I offered them change? I'm not allowing it. I asked for it. I got it or something close to it. I should accept that. I should say thank you and move on to the next person. That's what I should do. But what if I got it and I didn't feel like I should have it? Now, at the end of the 10-minute period, I gave the money away because I didn't need the money. It was just an experiment. But what if I had needed it and I gave it away? You've got to allow it into your life. Whatever it is that you want, you've got to allow it into your life. You ask for it, you get it, allow it into your life. That means hold on to it. That means keep it. That means it's yours. That means you're worthy of it. You embrace that. You've let go of your limiting beliefs. You already know you're worthy of it. Keep it. Step six is receive it and be thankful for it. So in step five, in the panhandling experiment, you're extending your hand for the money. You're allowing it into your life. Step six, it's actually being put in your hand, receiving it, and you're thanking them for it. So again, so step one is change negative beliefs about money and wealth into positive beliefs. Step two is know what you do not want. Step three is know what you do want. Step four is ask for it. Step five is allow it into your life. And step six is receive it and be thankful for it. Now remind yourself every day about what your wealth and money goals are. And they're going to change over time. And I want you to create positive visualizations of what having wealth will mean to you. When you use the law of attraction, you're already beginning to visualize. The exercise you've done, you're already beginning to visualize because you're writing things down and you're able to see them. You're able to feel them. You're able to know what that future will be like. But I want you to have a more formal way of doing this on an ongoing basis. So create positive visualizations of what having wealth will mean to you. Think about it. Think about what that money will mean to you. Think about the positive things that you will do with it, the way that you and everyone in your life will benefit when you are more financially abundant. And I want you to imagine the changes that will occur and how things will be different in your life. I was on a TV show recently, The Millionaire Matchmaker, where I was one of the millionaires, and they were setting me up with dates, actually. Very interesting. The way you get on the show is by being a millionaire. And I was Skyping with a friend in Malaysia last night, and she asked me, how has your life changed since you're on the show? And I hadn't even thought about that. This was something that was great for me. Being on that show established me as a millionaire. It allowed me to have a lot of fun. And the whole premise of the show was introducing me to potential matches who were appropriate for me. But I hadn't thought about how it had changed my life. This was something that I wanted. I wanted global recognition. I wanted to be on TV. I wanted to also talk about hypnotherapy on TV, which I got an opportunity to do as part of the show. But I hadn't thought about, until she asked me, how it had affected my life. But I did think about it beforehand. I imagined how being on that TV show would affect my life and what would be different. And I realized that that's really what manifested the TV show in the first place. Me visualizing, imagining the changes that would occur in my life and what would be different in my life. And so she really reminded me of how I got there, how I got on TV, by imagining it. And so by answering her question, I was actually telling her what had got me there in the first place. The changes that I wanted to have happen in my life, most of them had already occurred. And it was almost magical for me to go through that process of just typing that out, saying, well, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. I realized, whoa, that was my wish list. That's what I wanted to have happen. Most of the things that I wanted to have happen actually happened. So it's important to visualize them ahead of time. That's how you're going to make them into reality. Also, visualize meeting and exceeding both your short-term and long-term goals. You've got to imagine hitting the target. That's going to be very important. And be open to opportunities and ideas about success. Remember the A with the energy around it, the B with the energy around it, and the blue sky. All of that is about opportunities, being open to opportunities and ideas about success. Rather than it being set in stone, you have an A and you have a B in there, so there are certain basics that are going to be present, but they have energy around them, or however you represent it, and they equal the blue sky, which is infinite possibility. So have your basics in place, but realize that there are going to be opportunities that are going to lead to even more exciting possibilities, some of which you haven't even imagined yet. Join me in the next module as we talk about the drive to succeed, the drive that you're going to need to make it all happen.